listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host, the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest. I've been trying to schedule him for years, Mr. Asaf Rodeh, musical director for Lil Nas X, music collaborator, producer for Ariana Grande, Charlie Puth, and so on and so on. How are you, Asaf?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, and thanks for being patient and, you know, finally making it happen.
No worries. Thank you, too. You know, it's awesome when musicians, I love when they are too busy all the time, because I mean, that's what we work hard for. You know what I mean? It's like, we want to be working all the time. So like, when I just love that we stayed on it. We were like, we're going to make this happen. It's going to happen. It may take a long time, but we're here. So I was pleasantly surprised when you're like, yeah, man, I can do it. And I'm like, yes.
And I put my kid to sleep about 6 minutes ago. So it was just perfect. It worked out perfectly. So
how old is your kid? Let me ask you, how old is your kid and what's his name or her name?
He's 4 years old. His name is Geffen.
Oh, good name. I like it. You got him already in the music business already.
Yep.
So you come from Israel, and you started playing guitar, I assume, at a very young age. But let's go back to that very first moment of Zen that made you fall in love with music or fall in love with guitar. What was that moment of Zen for you?
It's funny. I started playing when I was about 11 years old, and I had I studied classical guitar, and I had a teacher that I really didn't like as a kid. And it's funny. We can talk about it for hours just about, you know, teaching. Cause I taught some guitar later on, but it's a teacher that has an agenda and just tries to do things his own way. And, you know, and you have to follow. And that wasn't the right thing for me. Also, I was 11 and I wanted to play rock and roll, and I was just playing, you know, some low E when he was doing, you know, just a couple strings here and there.
Like,
and
this is not right.
Yeah. And luckily, I say, quote unquote, I broke my elbow. And I was like, yes, I don't have to go anymore. And then a year later, I got a different teacher, and he was perfect for me. Just showed me what I wanted to see and got me excited about music and about rock and roll, basically. And yeah, I think it's funny because I never had, I mean, when I started playing, I had a friend that started at the same time, and he was better than me at the beginning. And it's kind of that competitive thing of trying to be better. And, you know, and once I got, you know, guitar is a difficult instrument when you start. So there's like it takes time for you to feel like you're actually doing something, you know, learning songs and then starting to play solos. There's a lot of technical stuff, especially for a kid. But then I started getting better at it, and I feel like having good ears. I feel like I was born with pretty good ears and started learning songs. And then other kids, some older kids, asked me to show them how to play some songs. They're like, okay, I like this.
You're like, give me the attention. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, everything. And pretty soon, I didn't really have I come from a pretty musical family. My parents played different instruments, but it would never anything formal or nothing that they could show me at home. We'd listen to a bunch of music.
What did they play?
My dad played a little bit of guitar. My mom played accordion and some keyboard.
They have a cluster band right there. I mean, that's
I know. Yeah, but you know, it was one of those things. Super open-minded family. It was kind of grew up. It was, you know, do your thing. I played in heavy metal bands when I was 14, and my parents were super supportive. My dad would drive me to clubs that they don't even let you in before you're 18 to play shows, and he would pick me up at 3 in the morning. When you know, So it was definitely, I mean, yeah, my parents definitely had I feel like a big part of just being supportive and not judging you or trying to, oh, you know, this is, you know, it's, you shouldn't be doing that. And I was always a good kid. So it was never about that.
Right.
But it was definitely an environment. And I found, funny enough, through that music, I basically played shows since I was like 14, 15, wow, playing clubs. And, you know, you rehearse and rehearsal spaces. It's years later, you find out it's like, oh, it's called arranging and somebody music directing, all the fancy names of things. Right. And you just sit in a room with a bunch of friends and decide, you know, creatively what's going to be. And that's where I think that's where I fell in love with it. And, you know, writing music, it was heavy metal, but it was kind of like, very creative, different instruments, a lot of like classical music. Believe it or not, there's a pretty strong metal scene in Israel.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, especially in like the 90s, it was really happening. I mean, you know, it's all relative, but
is it like Meshuggah? Is it like Metallica? Like
yeah, Meshuggah, Metallica, like death metal, and you know, a lot of heavy stuff. Yeah, but just a lot of it was a scene. So I was in that scene and making a lot of friends from different cities and kind of playing in different bands right away. And that was really cool for me, especially not growing up. Even I went to a teacher, but it wasn't none of my education was formal at that point. I didn't know anything. I mean, I could play great and I was, you know, I practiced, but it was all just like jamming with friends and coming up with parts and stuff. So
well, yeah, what's awesome about that, it's like, you know, like with my band, I always feel like there's an electricity when you bring a song in and you're arranging it in rehearsal. And it's like when you have great musicians, you know, I actually had this conversation with John Mayer a long time ago. And he said, you know, whenever he plays with his trio, it's like everybody comes in and you all want to impress each other. And I was like, that is such a great way to describe it, because it's like we all practice on our own. And then when you're in that room, it really shows what you've been working on or how long you've been playing or what you're playing. And when things come together, there's definitely an energy that's palpable. And I love that you really discovered that and felt that at an early age, because I'm sure that kind of like really navigated where you wanted to go in life right away. I mean, a lot of people never find that, and you found that so young. And I love that you found it in the metal scene as a 14-year-old kid. That's crazy, because who's in a metal band at 14? You know what I mean? That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, you're totally right. It was more, I mean, for me, just the being independent and, you know, taking the bus to a different city to go rehearse and, you know, it was just the purity of it that years later, especially now working in music, it's like, I miss those days. I mean, of course, everybody misses their, you know, I feel, especially working with a lot of young musicians today, I feel like it doesn't exist as much the same in an organic way, the way that it did, totally, you know, 20, totally, 30 years ago.
I know it maybe makes it sound old, but it's like, you know that we put in that hustle in a way that next generation doesn't put in that hustle. And I know you feel that, because I know exactly what you mean. Everything you're saying, from like performing or rehearsing, most people don't put in the work like that in that new generation. So I love that you said that, because it's very, yeah, it's very true.
Yeah. I mean, I see it every day. And I mean, there's great, great talent. Everything is available for you to, you know, YouTube and all the music in the world we had to like work hard to get. But I feel something about playing in a room with your friends and evolving as a musician that way is lacking. Rick put together bands and they come in, they're all great, and they're playing with their in-ears and the nice, you know, modern mix and everything is, and then you see the guitar player playing a solo over the singer and like, dude, there's something happening that's not just like, you know, this. And that's yeah, a lot of times it's a different world, but I feel I'm very grateful for that experience and growing. And also there's something very, those things get words and fancy, you know, terms when you get older and you learn all those things. Later on, I went to music school. And
where did you go to music school?
I went to music school in Israel, Ramon School of Music. That was a great experience.
Was it in Tel Aviv?
It was not far from Tel Aviv. Yeah, it's a great school that started as a jazz school. Basically, a bunch of the teachers are all like Berklee graduates from like the 70s, and wow. You know, they moved back to Israel and formed the school, and it was super. The first school that's not a that's for contemporary music. So it was definitely, you know, you learn all these terms and like, wait a minute, now it has this fancy term. And I was happy that I know what it means and what it feels like before I got, you know, oh, this is a, you know, counter line. You know what I mean? A lot of like, or.
Well, you know, it's funny too. It's like, I went to music school. I went to USC and I studied classical music. I was a classical singer, and it was weird because a lot of my joy, I don't know if you went through this, but I went through this in music school. A lot of the things I loved about music were kind of slowly starting to get destroyed because they either wanted you to learn a certain way, like kind of what your first teacher was having you do, or it wasn't this collaborative experience where it's like they're encouraging you to be creative on your own in a new way. Until I took a songwriting class, that's where it changed for me. So like, I'm sure for you as a player, you already had a sound, you already had a signature, a vibe. And then when you went to music school, they kind of curbed a little bit of that so that you learned a different style of technique or maybe get more versed in a different style. Tell me what that transition was like for you as a musician, because honestly, that fascinates me a lot because I went through a lot of that myself.
Yeah, I had a pretty similar experience, I would say. I mean, I went to music school. I served in the Israeli military. That's mandatory. Wow. So I spent 3 years in the Israeli military. So, which is funny because a lot of kids that from an early age have a formal education or as a part of, I didn't have music program in my high school. So it was kind of, I just did my thing and then went to the military and wasn't in a band or anything. So I just did, you know, I was a tank driver in the military, which, wow. You know, so, you
what
know,
a
so
dichotomy, years, dude.
So imagine
I'm like, I'm playing guitar and now I'm driving a tank.
No, that's exactly what it was. And you wow. know what? I was naive and I sent an application to go to the military band, which the bands are great and you get like actual touring experience. And then when you're done with the band, you're a working musician. But I was the opposite of that. I was 21 when I got out of the military. I was just doing, you know, military stuff and I was okay, what do I want to do with my life pretty much? So I spent a year traveling around. I went to Australia, New Zealand, wow. Did a whole thing, just like acoustic guitar and a surfboard and, you know,
wow. Traveled. Dude, we are connected, man. I bodyboard like 3 times a week. So
there you go.
I'm so into the ocean. It's weird because it's like, you know, you probably know Ariel Mann. You probably know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, what I love is when musicians are so inspired by both the ocean and music, because it's like everything works in waves in both those worlds. And it's like I'm constantly thinking about both those worlds when I'm in the other. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I love yeah, that. That's amazing. So you
yeah, and, it's usually, and it's usually badass musicians too. That's for sure.
Right.
Right. There's something, I don't know. But yeah, I feel it. So I took a year and I, like I was saying, I grew up and I'm a good kid and my dad is an architect with a business. And it was kind of like, should I go into the family business? Or I know I have this music thing that I'm good at. And, you know, but it was never, I never knew that I'm going to end up doing it for a living. It was never an option. I taught some guitar just to you know, for work. But then a friend of mine went to that music school and he told me, should check it out. It's really cool. And I said, well, I'm going to try to do a year and see where it takes me. And I had a similar experience like you did with just, I knew what I knew. And I was a pretty good guitar player. I had no formal education. I went there. They're like, oh, ear training. I'm like, I guess that I'm good at it, but I don't know any of the terms that you guys are talking about. So, and I felt in general, like looking back, I know that, you know, the teachers, they're all amazing musicians, but they're not necessarily they don't necessarily know the things that you want to know or are experiencing. Like, I wanted somebody to tell me the order to put the pedals in the pedal board. You know what I mean? And there's nobody who could do that. And at the same time, you were doing things. And I remember I had a private lesson with one of the guitar teachers who's incredible. And he was showing me certain things. And I was like, let me tell me how this would get me to where I want to get, you know, as a musician. And it was always kind of like they had their agenda and trying to make you fit into this mold. And I was just never that person. And I was never that person even before that. So it kind of triggered something in me that was like, oh, that's what it's going to be. Okay, I'll show you. No, I'm not going to do what you expect me to do. And which, like you said, what I did was I just played with every single band in school, just like after school. There, you know, we had the rehearsal spaces. So I would have like back-to-back rehearsals, and we would just do the same thing that I did. Like, amazing musicians made music, and you get better. It's like all legit musicians that I'd never had access to, like really good players. Right. And also the thing that I did, I started taking things that I was interested in. One of them was orchestration, production, Middle Eastern ensemble. I was like, wow. No, I'm not going to do the jazz ensemble because I don't feel like it was never my thing. I could hang, but it was never my thing. And I could do a lot of other things that were not appreciated. Like, I feel like I can strum an acoustic guitar, and I can play a song, and I feel like not a lot of those guys knew how to do that, and it was never something that was valued.
Well, I'm sure you know this too. It's like sometimes I find with guitar players, you know, I started late. I started when I was 18, when I was in music school, but I find a lot of like some of these, like sometimes jazz guitars, sometimes it doesn't matter what it is, when it's so there's so much emphasis on the soloing. When it comes time to just keeping time or like comping, they don't have that. And it's like, whoa, I see where you spend your time. It's like on all the noodling things, and it's not about the core things. Because to me, I started out with just playing rhythm, and like playing a rhythm guitar to me is so important, and holding that groove. And when I find the players don't have that basic thing down, where they can play every lick under the sun, I'm like, that doesn't impress me. It's like, I want to know that you can hold a groove and then do solo. So it's like, it's interesting that you say that, because, you know, you have to find your own voice, and it sounds like you did. Tell me about like how that Middle Eastern, class kind of changed a little bit of your direction. Cause that has to be an influence on your playing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, growing up over there, it's around you anyway, but there was something very, the teacher was really great, and he played, it's basically you sit in a circle and you know, improvise on those scales. Wow. And it was really cool, because first of all, it's humbling, because, you know, there's so much arrogance in Western music. It's like, oh, look at these people. And then you go to the other side and like, oh crap, these, you know, this is like heavy. This right. It goes really deep. There's like, you know, the micro tonality, and there's a lot, it's a deep knowledge that we look down on for some reason. But once you get into it and you try to improvise a solo playing that, those, you know, and you're like, yeah, this is not, there's nowhere near sounding good or legit. And, you know, so I had to put the time in. I mean, it was great just because it was different. You get your ear, get, you know, you get that sound more under your, as a guitar player, it was great because you get it under your fingers, especially, you know, you can do fretless guitars. Oh, but if you do it with frets, there's ways to like bend some notes and get those in between sounds, which is just, you know, it's a cool sound.
That's deep, man. I love that. I love when players use that. Did you ever know Zane Musa by chance?
Yeah, I know. I don't know the name.
So Zane was in my band for years, and he was actually, he went to CalArts, but he was, you know, heavily influenced by like Arabic music and Middle Eastern music. So like he'd be playing like a jazz solo or a funk tune, and he would start throwing these really cool Middle Eastern Arabic lines. And I was like, that is so boss when somebody take a voice and completely switch the way you think about how it should sound, because nobody's ever really done that. You know what I mean? So I love players having, they pull from influences like that. Now, do you find that like you still draw from something like that? Because, I mean, that had to have been a deep experience that, you know, it kind of resonates in your playing and the way you think about building solos or even arranging. I'm sure it seeps in. When do you think it kind of has seeped into something that you're working on, you know, whether you're producing or arranging something?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel, you know, it's funny because a lot of times, especially when you're doing something, if it was my thing completely, then, you know, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to think, okay, where is this going to be seen? Who the audience is and who the artist is. So in a way, I feel it's a part of me and I'm very comfortable. And somehow in a weird way, I always find myself in situations where the things that I happen to know are relevant. I know it sounds weird, but a lot of the arrangement stuff, and I mean, definitely the production stuff, but like the classical orchestration stuff that I studied helped me a lot. Whenever I got to a situation that was a little deeper harmonically, but not jazz, you know,
right.
A lot of like Christmas stuff that I happen to do and that's arranged in a classical way. And it's just like an open, you know, my ears are way more evolved and just like, oh, I hear this chord as this thing. It's more a larger understanding of harmony. And the same with Arabic music. I feel like, especially when you have to go to that thing and give it that flavor, I feel like if you have a deeper understanding of the sound, then it's going to sound more authentic. It's not just like, oh, here's a same with like country music that I spent a few years playing. It's everybody knows the lick the licks that you're supposed to play if you're playing that music. But if you're legit, if somebody that's really into that would it would not sound good. It would be like somebody, it's like an accent or somebody imitating something and not really, to me, it's not really respecting the genre in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, it's a part of who I am as a musician. I wish that I used it more on a daily basis, but it's definitely a cool sound that to not a lot of a problem that I have with, like, we're still talking about, you know, current younger generation musicians. There's a very specific sound that everybody's into right now.
And it's very homogenous. It's a very homogenous sound too.
Yeah. And so I'm always into stuff that's a little different. Somebody who can do all those things, but chooses to do something that's a little different. So I feel like I'm always, I look at players, a lot of players from Israel, like guitar players, play a lot of that, you know, Middle Eastern kind of like, even like bouzouki style guitar. And that stuff is mind blowing. You're like, this doesn't sound like anything else. You know, I don't know where you can use it, but you hear, it's just a very,
it's like having an ingredient. It's like using a special ingredient when you want to use it. And I really relate to everything you're saying because, you know, when I started my band, and I still am super heavy into African music, especially Western African and South African music. And it's like when I'd have players play, you know, they would start playing like pentatonic stuff. And I'm like, no, man, that's not the bag. Like, you have to learn the bag of the players that are like so unique so that if, you know, we happen to play with a player that, you know, that's from there, they'll know we did the bag and we're not like disrespecting it. So I love that you come from that place with music because that is exactly it. It's the respect for the music, for the art, you know? Yeah. So you finished music school. Tell me what that transition was like for you. You're out of music school and you're like, okay, I want to come back to the US or I want to explore how to get into Western music on a bigger level. Tell me what that transition was like for you.
So I finished music school and I started working locally trying to get, you know, there's a lot of incredible musicians over there. There's not a lot of work and it doesn't pay much, but there's incredible musicians. So, and I feel like in a way I was never a part of the scene over there. I grew up in a town that's like 20 minutes, 30 minutes from Tel Aviv, which in Israel terms is, you know,
very far.
Yeah. So I was never a part of any scene. And when I graduated school, I was, let's say 24 probably, which I was a little older and I started playing gigs and I had this thought. And my parents both spent some time in the U.S. In the 70s, went to college in New York and spent 7 or 8 years there, and kind of, so there's always, you know, I heard stories and I was always curious about it. And I, at some point I said, if I'm already spending the time trying to do something and trying to get into this world and then work more, I might as well do it on a larger scale, which is looking back naive and kind of.
No, but I mean, it has vision. I mean, I think a lot of it is musicians or artists in general have to have vision to pursue. And it's not, I don't find it as like, it's funny you say naivety. I feel like it's vision and the fact that you followed it. A lot of people do that. You know what I mean? So it's like having that kind of like foresight is not something that's easy, but you can only do it when you're young. Cause it's like, if you were to do it right now, you probably wouldn't have that same fire to kind of go after it. So
no, definitely not.
So you came over here and you're like, let me just see what I can do. And tell me, what was the first moment where you're like, oh my God, this is happening?
It's, I'll tell you when I feel this moment, when it happens. No, but it's funny. So I came here for a few months just to get a vibe of the place. I had one friend that I went to high school with that's not in music that happened to live here for a few years. And he had a room for me in his house. And I was like, I might as well take on that, you know, offer and come and check it out. And I moved here, and I remember I basically off of Craigslist started doing as any gig that I could, not even thinking about getting paid or the quality of the music. I wanted to know all the clubs, all the musicians.
Wow.
And I just started playing. Yeah. And just, I 2 weeks after I moved here, I had a gig at the Viper Room, which led to a South by Southwest after like a month. That's with awesome. You know, yeah, which was all, you know, it was nothing too fancy or that.
No, but it was, you know, in the music world, it's like those are huge accolades just to get into those rooms. Like the Viper Room is a huge name and it's got a reputation. It's not like playing some podunk coffee house in the middle of nowhere. The Viper Room is on the Sunset Strip. It's a very reputable club. South by Southwest is one of the biggest music conferences in the world. So these aren't like small things that you got into. And I love that now you can look back and be like, okay, yeah, those are cool. But when you're starting out, those are huge. It's funny how like when you're headed in that direction, they're much bigger. And then when they're behind you, they're smaller. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what, it was huge when I had those opportunities, but at the same time I walked into those clubs, there's something very different with, in general, there's a ton of bands and a ton of musicians here, and I feel like let me find the best way to say it, but in Israel there's something very forward about the way people communicate, and nobody's you're not gonna suck and not know it. You know what I mean? There's no way, especially if you're in your, you know, late 20s and older, everybody's going to tell you, you're going to know. And if you're not making money off of it, then it's going to be very hard for you to, you know, to take all the stuff that people are throwing at you just from your family. And which is on the one hand, unpleasant, but at the same time, I feel like there's a lot of dreamers that move to LA and they were great from a small town, and they were great where, or not even great where they were. They, maybe their parents think they're great, or maybe they think they're great, and they're, you know, supportive families, and they come here and they pursue the same opportunity. So in a lot of cases, I would play a show and you see the band after you, and you're like, I can't believe that these guys. And again, I'm not trying to sound like I'm the best musician in the world, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff. There's just a ton of musicians that come here and try to make it. And
there's a lot of show and no go.
yeah. But the experience for me was great. So I came here for 3 months just to check it out, and then went back home to sort all the visa and save some money. Because I knew that if I'm going to stay here, which is something that I tell a lot of young musicians that try to move here, like save up, you know, it's, you know, nobody's waiting for Asaf from Petah Tikva over here to come and take their gigs, you know?
Right.
And in a way I feel like I played gigs and one thing led to another. went to a bunch of auditions. Barry Squire at the time had a lot of big ones. It was 2007 or 8. So there's a lot of big auditions that are happening. I didn't get any of them, but I did get in the room and kind of see, you know, how things work and meet other musicians.
It's funny because, like, you're a tremendous musician, and it's like the Barry Squire thing. I know a lot of great musicians that go through there and don't come out with the Barry Squire gigs, and they're way better than the guys that sometimes do. But you know that you see, like, oh, this is the way Hollywood works. You have to have a certain look. You have to come in with this certain vibe, and that's how you get the gig with the XYZ artist. Yeah. But I'm like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, that's kind of cool for that thing, but most of it's kind of jive because the bands I love the most are when they're truly who they are themselves, and they're like that all the time, and there's like no fluff. It is like all real, all the way, and it's that's what I find is like miraculous. And you're kind of one of those musicians, so I'm surprised on one level that you didn't get it, but also not, because some of my favorite musicians and people went through the same thing and had the same, you know, response. So that's
I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, I got a couple, but I did like big ones, and I always felt like, yeah, I got this. And what you're saying is right. And it took me a long time to accept it that, well, maybe it wasn't yours when you walked into the room when people saw your face. And right. And a lot of hiring musicians now as part of what I do, I completely get it. It's unfortunate.
Right.
But it's when you're talking about pop music, it's a big, probably bigger part than playing the guitar, as much as I hate to say it. But, you know, it's a visual experience. You're talking about younger audience, you know. And I used to call it the haircut guitar players. It was always like some guy with a...
Exactly what you mean to say that. That's what's so funny.
But and you know what? I think on the other hand, realizing that everybody can play the gig. Anybody can play the gig. It's not about that. It's about all the other stuff. It's about being cool, looking cool, for people to like you, and more than anything, being in the right environment for you. You can want to play. I played metal as a kid. I came here and I wanted to do that, or thought that I could do that, and it just wasn't me. And also, going back to respecting, you know, the art, I feel like, you know, you can play blues guitar, but or country, but if you've never been to Nashville and you've never seen people that play those things since they were kids, you know, around the campfire, then like, what are you doing? You know? So I feel like in a way it was very, again, humbling for me. I looked at everything as like a very, like in sports, you're standing on the free throw line and like, this is my shot. If I get this gig, it's going to change my life. And it does for a lot of people, but I mean, I did learn the one thing that I think it did help me with is, you know, looking at yourself. I remember I would take videos of the way I looked when I played. I learned I play guitar, mandolin, and keyboard, and I learned and bass. So I would learn whatever I can, background vocals, the lyrics to all the, I would learn different songs that they didn't ask for the audition, and, you know, showing up and having all those things when I had an opportunity that was right for me, it was okay. This guy is who we need.
Well, it's like going that extra mile, but you know, that's a testament to your work ethic, and that's why you've gotten these amazing gigs, and you're working with, you know, some of these amazing artists like Charlie Puth and Ariana Grande and Lil Nas X. Let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
Charlie Puth. Let's do it.
All right, here's Charlie Puth and Selena Gomez. We Don't Talk Anymore.
We don't talk anymore, we don't talk anymore, we don't talk anymore like we used to do. We don't laugh anymore, what was all of it for? Ooh, we don't talk anymore like we used to do. I just heard you found the one you've been looking, you've been looking for. I wish I would have known that wasn't me. You brain. Oh, it's such a shame that we don't talk anymore.
Such a slamming tune. Such a slamming tune. I mean, that is, that permeated the airwaves for a good 6 to 9 months, man. Tell me, like, did you play acoustic guitar on that? Tell me what you did.
Yeah. So it's a funny story. I started working with Charlie in 2015, and it was kind of, it was a great experience because I got to see pretty much what happens to an artist that has a song that's number one on the radio and that blows up, and he happens to be really, really talented. So that was also just the experience, you know, how, and I feel like I'm very fortunate that I got to be around that a couple of times in my career, seeing somebody asked them to take a picture for the first time, and then to where they're huge and they have security, you know, it's crazy to see and be around it. So with him, it was pretty much, we did a bunch at the beginning. It was me and him just doing acoustic shows, him on the piano and I play guitar, wow. We played radio stations and yeah, just a bunch of, I mean, it was all like radio station promo stuff basically. And I mean, I learned a ton from that, from playing with him. I don't think I've worked with anybody that's more musical than him. I mean,
he's a piano player, badass singer, writer, the whole bit.
Yeah. So that song, can't remember where we were, somewhere. It was one of those, literally 2 years of back-to-back touring. We went to Asia like three times, Europe like two or three times, and the US all over. So it was definitely a hectic couple of years. But that song, we were in some dressing room and he said, I have this idea for a song. Can you play this? And I played the notes. Of course it was like this, you know, this, he sings it all in the range that he wants. Yeah. Knows exactly what he wants. And he recorded it on his iPhone. And the next day you know, he's like, guys, be quiet. We're recording this. And we recorded it the next day. He plays me basically pretty similar to what you just heard. It was before Selena Gomez was a part of it, but he produced it all himself. And I heard it and I was like, wow, is it? So basically the recording that ended up on the record is just was made with an iPhone. Which wow.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
crazy.
That's yeah. Crazy. And it's also a little faster than I had played it, which I found out when I was getting ready to play the show. And I was like, I can't believe I have to play this every night now.
You're like, damn lick.
I know. And it was like, I'm the one who played on the recording. It was, yeah, it's definitely funny. But yeah, you know, it's so fast and it repeats itself a million times. Like this, once you go and you're doing acoustic shows, it was just me and him with the guitar. It's like, yeah, it's definitely one of those parts for me that's just really hard to, you're talking about keeping time and, you know, being a rhythm guitarist. But yeah, he just recorded it and then there was, I don't know what it was in the charts for months. And it was, yeah, it was a cool experience to be a part of.
You just like played that lick and then it blows up and it's everywhere. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, that's me.
I think honestly, you know, that's super cool. And, you know, I remember I was in Israel and we go to some like old market and it plays on, and I'm telling the guy, the produce stand, and like, this is me, you know, but it's, which is super cool. But I think the biggest thing from that for me was there, cause you know, there's always this idea, especially coming from growing up when we, I mean, I'm assuming we're similar age, but I'm 42 now.
Yeah, I'm 43. I'm 43. We are.
You know, where you're like, oh, we're going to go into the studio. There's going to be an engineer and a lot of gear and somebody's going to mix it. And then realizing that you don't need anything to make good music, which was, to me, was mind blowing. Cause it was like, no excuses anymore. You just got to get better at it and know what you're trying to do and be creative, which are things it was such an inspiring experience for me just to know, well, there it is. I saw it with my own eyes.
Wow.
You know, he recorded the vocals. I can't remember if it was on the road, probably in some closet in a hotel room where, you know,
that's crazy. And yeah. So what, he did all the production, just like comping all the like synth bass and stuff. He did all of that in a hotel. Yeah. Wow.
That's, I mean, I don't remember what part of it. Cause I know they did the vocals for, and I don't know how much work was done after, but I remember the second day, the same feeling where, look, this is happening. It was already there on the next day.
Well, I remember he said, I saw him at the Greek and he said there were a couple years where he was just like floating around couches and like, he was like doing the songwriter thing and like pitching it to labels and no labels really like grabbing on. And then I think he got a publishing deal first, or he got some kind of production deal first. Yeah. And he just started like hustling songs and doing what you just said. And it's amazing that you saw that like side of the hustle, because you see what it takes and also how an artist kind of like walks in and has all this great stuff that they can do. And labels are still like, no, 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 no. It's like so crazy. And then it takes that one song to push it over the edge. What do you think was it about the song, the hook? Was it about all of it, the timing of the song? What do you think pushed that song over the edge? Because it is so great.
I mean, I think, first of all, I really like this song, and I think it's great melodically, but I think it's very real. And I think it's, I don't know, I think it just comes from a real place, and I feel like it's, you know, when you're not trying too hard, I don't know what was the experience for him writing it, but just seeing how it came together organically. And I mean, he's like always, he always has ideas. He's always making music. It was like, it was really cool to be. And it's cool also because you feel like the nerd that likes music in me is like, this guy, that's all he wants to do.
Right.
That's all he wants to do, which is just
awesome. He also went to music school. And I want to say he went to Berkeley.
Yeah, he went to Berkeley. I don't think he graduated.
Right.
Was that?
He was doing a lot of jazz on piano.
He was doing jazz. He was doing some production, I think. Yeah, but I mean, with him, just with his ears, it's like it was there from the beginning. You know, I mean, but he put in the work. You know, he's a really good producer, and not to mention like vocal producer. That stuff is insane. Just listen to like stems of like the vocal stuff. It's all like layers, and of course the harmony is all there, and it's like he knows his stuff like.
And what I do, like, I've watched like videos or things that he's talked about. It's like the way he takes a vocal and reshapes it to sound maybe gritty or maybe airy or like how he layers vocals. That's the part that like separates the good from the great. And he's got that thing, you know? So, and it's so cool that you played that part and you saw it kind of take flight, because honestly, that part of the song is probably one of the hookiest parts of the song because it's based on the whole thing.
Yeah. It's like, it's pretty much the whole,
it is the spine of the song.
Yeah.
You're very modest, but that's a pretty
cool. No, it's nothing. I was told what to play and I performed it. There's nothing,
But you know what the thing is? It's like you have every player, you know this too. He could have 20 players line up and play the same thing. And all 20 people are going to play it a little bit differently. So obviously you had a style of playing that worked for the song. You knew what to play for the song. It's, to me, it's about that. It's about that signature. It's it's like it's all the time that, you know, it takes to kind of like get that signature into your playing. That's the time, that's the years and the decades that it takes to do something so simple and have it be so epic. You know what I mean? Let's play something else. Sorry, go ahead. You were gonna say something.
No, I said I'll take that. Yeah, thank you.
let's play the Sophie Simmons song. We'll do Sophie Simmons Selfish. Here's Sophie Simmons Selfish.
I never say we'll come sooner rather than later. Your messages would stop and I begin to hate her. You've been watching me so closely, making sure you keep tabs on me. You want you to believe I'm fine, but it's not like that all the time. I want you to tell me that you made a mistake when you left and now you're begging. I want you to tell me I'm so beautiful, you can't live without my blessing.
Tell me a little bit about that production. What went into that?
I started working with Sophie, playing in her band and MDing, and I was trying to do more production at that point, and I was coming up with some ideas, and I had this beat that there's always that one beat that's like, yeah, nobody's gonna be into this one. It was kind of like, it started from like a sample of that radio, kind of like, you know, when you change the radio station and find it. And I harmonized that and I added some kicks and stuff. Yeah. That's what's like the
awesome.
And I was And I you know, put some things on it and I played for her, and I played it a bunch of other, played her a bunch of other things. She was like, yeah, that's cool. Maybe work on that. And then she heard that. I was like, yeah, I like this one. Let's work on it. I was like, really?
Wow.
And she wrote, yeah. And you know, I think she maybe even cut the vocals. I mean, she's a really good writer and really cool.
She's come into this room and we've written together with my other writer. And she always, I remember she had like a ton of, like vocal melodies in her phone, and she was just rattling them off, and we were building tracks around like things in her phone. And I'm like, man, she just came to the session with like maybe 50 ideas, like not all together, but she was like, let's try this. And so we were just like catching up with her. It's like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, she's got like 3 sessions a day at that time, at least, and you know, just like really hardworking and writing a bunch of songs and really talented. So that was, and I was really happy because it's one of those songs where it's not just like, oh, here's a track that would fit this artist. It was kind of like, it was, she was into it. And I feel like I'm really happy with that one. And that's right. I think it was super quick. I don't think, again, it was one of those things where it's already there in a way, and the song is there, and you have to like, kind of like take a step back and be like, okay, this is already working, you know. I don't need to do anything to this, and yeah, I like that track.
Well, being in her band, you probably also were a Kiss fan, and I'm sure Gene Simmons came to a couple of gigs and you had to just play it cool, like, oh yeah, you're just the father of the artist, like,
yeah,
in the back of your mind, like, it's Gene Simmons and this is amazing.
I mean, we did the Kiss tour at some point. And I mean, he was born in Israel. I don't know how much you know of Kiss, but like, so he has and me going to the military was already like, okay, you're cool. And to me, it was always super nice and very generous and welcoming. And I mean, them play and what's that?
Yeah, he's a very good businessman too. It's like,
yeah.
The whole thing.
And he's going to, you know, he's going to tell you what he thinks, you know what I mean? And I respect that. And, you know, coming from going back to that, I'm like, great, you know, let's go. So that was a great experience. And seeing them play live on the cruise a few times, it was just crazy. And we saw him at the Forum, I think, one time, and we had, you're like right there. You got tickets. It was really, and you know, got to meet the whole band. It was super cool. Yeah, they're, I mean, good people. I really like Sophie and her family.
I saw Kiss open for Aerosmith, and it was just like two epic bands that I probably would never have put together on a tour because they're just so different. Mm-hmm. And it was like, this is awesome, you know, just like seeing two legendary, these are rock, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Famers on the same stage, and they both did their thing, and it was just like, this is rad, you know. There's like that rock royalty, and he's part of it, you know. So yeah. Like what I love about her hustle is like, she knows she has a lot to prove because she's the daughter of rock royalty. You know what I mean? So, but you see it in her hustle, and I love that the song came together. It sounds awesome. I love it. It's really, really cool, man. Let's play something else. We're going to play Madison Beer, Hurts Like Hell. Tell me a little bit about this song before we play it.
It's just, she had that song, and it was, I think, a single for that album at the time. She wanted to make an arrangement that's a little different, and I just played something on the guitar and kind of arranged it for that. I think we did, I played for her. I didn't never play it in her band, but we did a lot of acoustic shows, and it was kind of came about, and she's like, oh, I want to record it. So we just did it.
That's awesome. Here's Madison Beer, Hurts Like Hell.
Said he loved me. My baby said he needed me. Gonna eat, sleep, and breathe me out to the end. Yeah. But then my baby went back. I guess he had a relapse. He had to sneak, cheat, and bring me down. It had to end. Yeah. My baby was asleep in his bed. Fingertips on the edge. He left me for a girl that he regrets leaving me.
Performance, what a great part you played, and man, the voicings were cool, the tone was cool.
Thank you.
How many takes did it take you to kind of like piece that together? What was your kind of like mindset when you're playing it?
I'm big on like solo guitar stuff as a, you know, with a singer, and a part that's kind of not necessarily like strumming chords or that's, I used to think of it like I want to play it so it'll be hard for people to figure it out in a way, which is a little silly, but just like something that's more original. And I can't remember if I had any like open, like different tunings or anything, but there's only a lot of open strings and stuff. And I think once I got the tone down, it was kind of like, it came together.
Very cool voicing, yeah. Very cool chords. I mean, it's just, what I like about it, it's like, it kind of drives the whole song from the very beginning until the strings come in. And it's like, you're not missing other instruments. It just sounds like a very big part. You know what I mean? So it's really, that's not easy to do when it's just one instrument and a voice, you know? So I love that you play for the song. That is everything. Asaf, where can people find you if they want to have you on their tour, have you on their record? Where's the best way to find you?
My email is good, asafrodeh@gmail.com, or Instagram, Asafrodeh, asafrodeh. Yeah.
You are such a tremendous artist. We're going to have you back, because you have magic fingers, and everything you touch just turns to platinum, gold, et cetera, et cetera.
We'll appreciate it.
We'll have to see you on a tour sometime. You and I are going to have to make some music now. We'll have to get Art in the room and just make it a full connection. Maybe
go surfing.
That's right, dude. That's right. Well, you've been a terrific guest. And, man, we finally made it happen. It took years. Next time, it shouldn't take years, and it won't. But you know what? If it does, you're worth the wait, because, man, all of your music and all of your insight, it's really you know, that's why I started this radio show, is to showcase, you know, music minds like yourself, and also kind of like show, you know, a lot of people don't know what goes into these songs and these pop songs. And it's like, it's so cool when the stories are you playing on an iPhone and it's on the radio, or you voicing what sounds like a whole orchestra for a song. It's just awesome. So on behalf of Sam, myself, and Asaf, we hope you guys love the interview as much as we did. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks, Asaf, for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. We'll talk soon, okay? Peace and love, everybody. Take care and be good to each other.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.